Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. As adults, we know what we need to do to reduce our risk for heart disease. But for one specific group of children, babies, even infants still in the womb, that increased risk may already be their unfortunate birthright. A recent study published by the Journal of the American Heart Association reveals that children who grow up in socially and economically disadvantaged families and neighborhoods may be at a higher risk of developing heart disease. That's because 11 and 12-year-olds in this population were found to have thicker carotid artery walls, which increases the risk of heart attack and stroke later in life.
There's already enough of a legacy of diabetes and other chronic diseases burdening this socioeconomic group. In the words of our next guest, every child needs and deserves the opportunity to grow up healthy, giving us his perspective on this study and what needs to happen to change the outcome is Dr. Clyde Yancey, Chief of Cardiology in the Department of Medicine at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. Dr. Yancey is past president of the American Heart Association.
Thank you for coming on Take Care, Dr. Yancey.
I'm delighted to be a part of Take Care. Thank you.
All right, the findings of this study are very specific. Children from socially and economically disadvantaged families and neighborhoods have thicker carotid artery walls at very young ages, which means they're already at greater risk for heart attack later in life. And these kids are so young. They're just 11 and 12 years old. So what do you make of the study's conclusions? Because this is a really frightening legacy.
So this is an important conversation for all of us to have, because I think the emphasis appropriately is on children, their health, and their opportunities for a productive and healthy adulthood. Increasingly, the world is becoming a place where everything is interconnected, and the burden of health and disease ends up being important to all of us, because even though every one of us can advocate the importance of personal responsibility, ultimately, we all pay the price. Either we benefit from the presence of health, and so that burden is less, or we pay for the burden of disease. Let's start at the very beginning and be explicitly clear. These investigators showed an association, not necessarily a cause, that's important to highlight, but an association between evidence of the socioeconomic position and the likelihood of having this barometer of risk, which is thickening of the major artery in the neck, the carotid artery, as a presage or as a forecast of what might happen for adults. So that's the important message, that somehow or another, your life and living circumstances as a child sets you up for what appears to be a greater risk for reasons that have to be better elucidated. Again, it's just an association, not yet cause and effect. So that's the first big take-home message, and I'm agreeing with you completely that it is sobering.
Can you explain the role of the carotid artery so that people understand? I mean, obviously, there are people who understand what smoking does to the lungs, but there may not still be a widespread knowledge of what the condition is that you are talking about.
So this is really a brilliant question. It's brilliant because it's not necessarily that the carotid artery, that is the large blood vessel that pulsates in the neck, it's not necessarily that is involved in the likelihood of developing disease. What's important is that with simple technologies now that we can use by hand, we can actually get a fairly clear image of that artery. And that image allows us to identify the burden of atherosclerosis, that is the deposition of fat and cholesterol in the lining of that carotid artery. That's important, and the reason I'm calling it a barometer is because it predicts the likelihood that that same burden of atherosclerosis is throughout the other blood vessels in the body, including the vessels that go to the brain and the blood vessels that go to the heart. So what we're suggesting to you is that because we can sample one blood vessel in the body that's sufficiently large enough and sufficiently close enough to the skin that we have a clear window into the burden of hardening of the arteries, we can then predict the likelihood that some consequence of hardening of the arteries is present in that particular individual. So it becomes a really powerful tool that helps us understand risk.
Now, I know you made the point that their findings were more of an association and not necessarily cause and effect. We think about certain socioeconomic groups that may have a higher incidence of heart disease later in life due to traditional risk factors like body weight or blood pressure or exposure to secondhand smoke. Well, when you're 11 years old, I don't know that those factors could play a role in your heart health at such a young age, which is why the finding was surprising. And the authors proposed that infection and inflammation may be among the additional underlying factors that contribute to that thickening. What do you think of that being the conclusion? Does that seem sound to you, that you might believe that to be true? Or do you think there are other factors that just weren't examined?
So what's sound to me, and what should be appreciated by everyone who's listened to this story, is that by virtue of establishing the association, it prompts us to look for answers. And right now, the answers are all theoretical. But context matters. Remember, this was a study done in Australia with Australian children that are in challenged socioeconomic positions, extrapolating these data to a United States or North American population may require some more nuances. But the really important takeaway, and I'd like to highlight two points right now, we are increasingly becoming aware that a construct, and when I say construct, I mean an environment, an atmosphere that influences health, has emerged, and we identify this construct as the social determinants of health. And when we deconstruct the many things that fall into this big box, like education, like housing density, like freedom to be able to move around, like socioeconomics as an income, we begin to realize that there are components within this category of social determinants of health that appear to be, again, associated with disease. So think about the thought experiment that we're setting up right now. We start by making global assessments of socioeconomic position, as the investigators in Australia did. And now we're populating our understanding of socioeconomic position with a more specific, again, construct that identifies the social determinants of health. And we're recognizing that that is one step closer to what may be causal. But there's another very important piece here. And the other very important piece is the built environment. In the portrayal of these data, several comments have emerged that are very important. Is it conceivable that before children are even born, they are entering an environment that will immediately challenge their health? Remarkably, the answer might be yes, because the built environment, that is the actual hardwiring of the community, the home, the neighborhood in which we live, may have a much more compelling influence on health than we've ever appreciated before. Where do you live? Are you able to access fresh fruits and vegetables? Is there a safe place to recreate? Is public transportation available? Can you get to a hospital or a healthcare facility? Are there physicians? Are there clinics that are proximate, that are close to where you live? All of these things go beyond anything that an individual can control and constitute what we call the built environment. So this marriage of the built environment and the social determinants of health would be the way that we would deconstruct this association of socioeconomic position and this barometer of atherosclerosis.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Our guest is Dr. Clyde Yancey, Chief of Cardiology in the Department of Medicine at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. We're talking about a study that was done recently in Australia about disadvantaged kids maybe at higher risk for heart disease later in life. And specifically, they were looking at a really young childhood population and finding markers that would predict heart disease later. And Dr. Yancey, we're talking about all the other factors that would be influencing the situation. As you mentioned, are people exercising? Do they have access to healthy fruits and vegetables, et cetera? But I really want to go back to their suggestion that inflammation has something to do with this. I'm wondering, Do you believe that? I know there are cultural things that can be generational and passed down, but are we saying there's a genetic component that might, I guess it couldn't have been influenced by socioeconomic circumstances if it was actually genetic, but what role would inflammation play in all this, and how could a baby be born and then by the time they're 11 have this condition, outside of everything we were saying before about socioeconomic influences in general health?
So it's always fascinating to theorize. And one more statement about this marker of atherosclerosis that bears mention is that the distinction between the degree of atherosclerosis seen in these children and those that don't have the same thickening of the carotid artery at this early age is equivalent to an extra 8 to 10 years of aging. Imagine that demonstrated or impacting an entire lifetime. You really do begin to understand that it is a warning sign that these children are more likely to have heart attacks and strokes. Now, to your specific question, the other thing that's very fascinating about thinking about what else may be going on in addition to these social determinants of health in the built environment is that for the first time, research is teaching us that environmental influences may, in fact, impact how our genes work and how our genes produce proteins. There's some elaborate scientific theory about all of this, but it actually seems cogent and it makes sense. And so it is conceivable that something like inflammation, to which a child in certain socioeconomic environments in Australia may have been exposed to very early in life, is one of the levers that may be impacting this observation. Again, we have to be very careful to ascribe a cause, but we can certainly say there are several candidate causes. Inflammation is one of those. Social determinants of health is one. The built environment is another. But the real take-home message is this. It's becoming very, very clear now that circumstances that are completely beyond the control of the family and especially beyond the control of a child are having an influence on that child's health. That's the part that's so very sobering.
You were past president of the American Heart Association, and I'm sure the question I'm going to ask you next is the million-dollar question, which is, what can we do about it? What can society do? What are some of the early interventions that can be implemented to decrease the risk of heart disease in these disadvantaged populations?
So step one is awareness. Recognize that these Australian children were largely not ethnic and were not part of a minority. And so in North America, we typically ascribe these kinds of findings to children that happen to be black or happen to be Hispanic or belong to other races or ethnicities. What we're understanding is that just being exposed to this challenged socioeconomic environment is sufficient. So raising awareness is the first thing. The second thing is understand how important our communities are. We talk about personal decision-making. We should begin to talk about population level and community level decision making. Are we building communities? Are we making decisions about the way our neighborhoods are organized that promote health? Think about our schools, another very important network where we can capture some important concepts of health within the construct of how school is put together. Are we giving that sufficient thought? It will be hard. These are things that require a heavy lift, but raising awareness is the first thing, and then shifting a little bit of our attention towards things that we haven't thought about before. Are we building sidewalks? Are we building walking paths? Are we protecting green space? Are we making certain that areas are safe? Are we encouraging opportunity zones for vendors to come in with different choices for fruits and vegetables? Are we controlling local aggressions and violence and things that really constitute more stress and more anxiety? So these are things that represent the next dimension of how we need to address health. Yes, we have personal decisions we all need to make, but I'll get back to where I started. We're talking about children, and we're talking about giving children the opportunity to grow up healthy and have a chance at a healthy adulthood. Isn't whatever effort we put forward worth it, given that the target population is a child?
Dr. Clyde Yancey is Chief of Cardiology in the Department of Medicine at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. Dr. Yancey, thank you so much for your insights into this topic.
Thank you very much. Delighted to talk to you today.